You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Who asked those questions?
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Susanna Collins. 9 days. 9 days until opening day. We've waited. We've braved the cold. We're starting to brave CONCACAF Champions League. It is here. And if you're watching on YouTube, we have a new set. Used to be the green room. It was the blue room. It was the radiator. It was various closets throughout the offices of Major League Soccer.
They put us in the corner.
Yes, and now...
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
I understood that reference.
Thank you. I'm so glad you did.
I was going to laugh.
I'm so glad you did.
Then it felt inauthentic.
Doyle's always there to save me.
You two are
right
sort of...
Line,
so. You guys are having a cultural moment right now.
Exactly. Exactly. It is a big show. It is our Western Conference preview. Decided by David Goss. It was going to be the Eastern Conference preview.
A game changer.
I know you
If you want a revolution, vote for me.
Gotcha. What was your logic here? Why did we go Western Conference first? By the way, Eastern Conference is Monday, and then our prediction show with Sam Stachel is on Thursday. That ought to be really fun. We have
rumor.
Rumor is. Until he shows up, we won't know.
Yeah.
Until we won't know.
I went with Western Conference first because I'm tired of the East Coast bias that exists. You think your time zone's first, so you get to go first, that you matter more. Forget that.
I think it's the only person at this table who's exclusively lived their life on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Is you.
Best Coast.
David Goss.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Best Coast.
Cool. So
definitely not.
We're putting together
I can give
that
you
prediction
a ton
show.
Of reasons why.
And we have some good categories, but as always, we want you to help us with those categories. We will not have any mail until Thursday. So send your categories, your guarantees, your random predictions, whatever it is you want us to go through on Thursday, we will pick the best of the best. Right now, these are three of the categories that we know we have that we will do. The David Akam Dark Horse MVP candidate. That's definitely getting done.
Who came up with these?
The Yamil Assad outside back to watch in 2020.
Oh boy.
And then, of course, the Dom Baji first time double digits goal scorer, probably a domestic player.
You mean Matt Doyle's Dom Baji.
Exactly. Or Kalen Carr's Dom Baji.
I understood that reference as well, David. Thank you.
So before we get to the Western Conference, we will go through all 13 teams. We'll give them all 6 minutes. We wish we could give them as 15,
I am so
20,
stressed
half
out
an hour.
About this, by the way. I have been like my since I walked in here this morning, my blood pressure has just like
predictions
spiked.
Make you nervous.
I am freaking out.
Because mm-hmm. you don't like being wrong?
There's just so much pressure.
Wrong show to be on.
And I know that like within 3 weeks, like it's just everything's going to explode.
Already.
And I'm going to be like, well, that's, yeah.
You mean like you could pick a team to make the playoffs and then they could fire their coach tomorrow. That's like an example of how this could all go wrong.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we still got 9 days to go.
Well, the nice thing about MLSsoccer.com predictions is that there is a statute of limitations and it's like 2 weeks. So after those 2 weeks are up, you can't be held responsible for what you say on Extra Time.
And yet we're calling it the Dom Baji first time.
Okay, so look, CCL Fever coming. We'll get to the previews. We have some news to go through. The news we start with here, you've read about it. You've heard about it. You know, it's not good. Ron Jans resigned as the head coach of FC Cincinnati after saying he said the N-word in the locker room. Two players, the players reported it. There was an investigation during the course of that investigation by FC Cincinnati and Major League Soccer. According to Jeff Birding, he said this in a statement. He's the club president of FC Cincinnati. Some themes emerged, and Ron offered his resignation. We agreed that it was the best course of action for everyone involved with FC Cincinnati. Yohan DeMay is now the interim coach for the second time after Alan Koch was let go last year. He came in. Ron Jans replaced him, I believe, in August, if I remember correctly.
That's about right. Yeah.
There's not much
11 games.
Yeah, there's not much to add to this. You don't say that. You should never say that. If you're thinking, oh, that doesn't make sense, think again. Keep thinking. Think until you figure out that you can't say that. And there were also some other things involved here. So Ron Jans moved on. FC Cincinnati got to move on. They got to figure something out. This will be their third full-time head coach in their less than 2 years in Major League Soccer. So Yeah, they got some issues, and we'll talk about those issues more in the Eastern Conference preview come Monday. Sim DeJong now signed with FC Cincinnati. He's played a lot of games for Ajax. He played for Sydney last year. He's 31 years old. He's Dutch. He's an attacker, a forward, maybe a number 10. We'll see what he means to this team.
Played with Jurgen Locadia at PSV, I believe, a few years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, they had like a half a season to get. I mean, he's played for Ajax and PSV primarily through this past decade. He has a handful of caps for the Dutch national team. You look at his resume, like, if you can get this guy for free, you get him for free. It seems like a good pickup.
And that's what they did. Yep. It could be a DP. He can be TAM. They will decide before the roster compliance date, which is the 28th of February, which he will be. Before we get to Free Space, which is CONCACAF Champions League and his disappointment and was a mixed bag for Major League Soccer in the first three games, big news for the Fire, Susanna.
Yeah.
WGN, yeah. Sports are back. I still remember back in the day. We got WGN in Kansas.
Yeah,
at the Cubs game.
Everybody got WGN back in the day.
TBS was trying to come into our house and make us Braves fans. But now the Chicago Fire are on, you know, what's it called when you're in every household in a city, when you're over the airways?
Terrestrial television.
Thank you. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
They also signed a young DP, Ignacio Aliceta, from Defensa y Justicia. Mm-hmm. Justicia, sorry, I missed
Justicia.
The I.
Yeah.
Justicia. That's TBD. He's a winger. He's direct. We'll see if he's good. On WGN, though, that's big news.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And what I also love about this is that they're going to be on WGN, which feels like a kind of throwback to the OG. Like, as you said, like, everybody used to get WGN. In Chicago, it's a big deal. We used to watch it all the time. The Chicago Cubs were obviously broadcast on there. But they're also going to have their games on ESPN Plus, too. So it's this nice, like, kind of, like, harken back to, like, the OG kind mm-hmm. of old days. But then you can also, you know, they're keeping it fresh still with, like, the broadcast on ESPN Plus. So it's a nice little, like, hybrid of both of these worlds. But the exposure within Chicago is massive, because WGN is one of those channels that's just, it's on all the time in households. So I think it's great. It's great. People are going to be able to watch and pay attention.
Between that and moving downtown, it does feel like a new era of like day-to-day relevance
totally.
That maybe they lacked in Bridgeview.
Exactly. It will be something that is actually in the conscience of people in Chicago. The Chicago Fire will be a team that will be talked about, and that is great. It's great news.
Fingers crossed the talking will be good.
Yeah, that the on-the-field product will be befitting
TBD.
Of said
TBD.
Platform.
TBD.
We shall see. We got money to talk about that. We got to move on. Producer Anders said if we want to do 6 minutes in every team, we have to be somewhat quick. So let's talk about CONCACAF Champions League and then get to it. Portmore United Cruz Azul got us started on Tuesday night. It was either not a great omen for this tournament, or the best omen, because Portmore United was on their way to an insane upset, and then Cruz Azul scored two goals in stoppage time and won the game 2-1. Hey, Alianza beat Tigres. That's a good omen. Comunicaciones drew Club America. That's a pretty good omen, although
that game was
late
brutal.
Goal from Club America. Yeah,
that game, like, I can't imagine what the return leg at the Azteca is going to look like, because Comunicaciones were out there. They That was, like, only borderline soccer.
Do what you gotta do, I guess.
Kumate.
Do what you gotta do. Thierry Henry, game one of his managerial career with the Montreal Impact. What did we learn, Dave? 5-2-3 lineup? They didn't want the ball, had really no desire for it. They were looking for pressing triggers. When they got them, they tried to transition quickly, and boy, it worked in the first half. Up 2-0. Yeah. Orgia Kwankwo with a nice goal to get it started.
Mm-hmm. And then
Romo Kyoto.
Yeah.
And then Romo Kyoto went off injured, which was kind of, that's like the Romo Kyoto game right there.
Everyone
scores,
went off injured.
Goes off injured. He didn't get to make a substitution that he wanted to make. It was all injury substitutions. And then, of course, Saprissa came back and tied the game 2-2. But two away goals.
So they got the result they wanted. That was a good game for them. In terms of performance, Henry talked about after the game, he liked the battle. He liked the fight. He liked the way he felt. When Saprissa figured things out, his team countered and had ideas on the field of ways to react to that. I don't think there was anything from the performance that I walk away thinking that I'm excited about for Montreal. Now it's early, it's preseason. Tight air was injured, who's probably their best player. So they're still figuring a lot of things out. it was a result they needed. They have a legitimate road to getting deep into the CCL if they can get the result at home against Saprissa. But I didn't walk away from this thinking, oh, yeah, a Thierry Henry Montreal team is X.
Felt like Thierry said, we are going to be defending a lot. Let me just set up my team in the best way possible to survive.
I mean, partially that, partially as well. Like, if you're playing a team that has David Guzman as one of their center backs, then you should encourage them to come up the field a little bit. And it was very smart to do that. And just a correction, it was Okwankwo who went off injured earlier.
So did Romo Kyoto.
I thought Kyoto was just like out of gas in the seventh.
Yeah, I don't think he went off. Camacho went off.
Went off injured. They really missed a player like Victor Cabrera there.
Inside joke. Leave him alone. Leave Victor Cabrera alone.
2-2 on the road is like, we saw it with Tigres. We saw it with Club America. Like, we saw it with LAFC. Any team is happy with 2-2 on the road, especially if it's your first game of the year. And the theme for MLS teams so far was like, we only got about 60, 65 minutes worth of gas in the tank. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Montreal down the stretch. They held on just enough.
LAFC, not enough gas, not enough pieces on the back line, not enough final product, not enough sharpness, not enough a lot of things. 2-0 losers in Lyon. Now, Lyon is leading Liga MX, so this is not some team that they should have had the opportunity. They should have just like gone down and wiped. What happened here? What'd you guys see?
It was a preseason. The big one to me was that LAFC looked like a team in preseason, and they are a team that tries to play through pressure, play through tough places, take the ball in tough situations, and it all needs to be right. They're not a team that can come in and say, "Oh, we're kind of off our game. We'll grit through this."
They're not going to go 5-2-3.
No, which. Yeah, and we can get to all of that later. So that was the big thing that stood out to me. The second one was that they traded Walker Zimmerman. Those are the two biggest things that stood out to me, but everyone else can say.
They could have been down a lot by a lot more goals. And so defensively, I was like, ooh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it was a little bit. That was worrying.
It was all the stuff that we've seen over the last couple of years with LAFC in that, you know, they take a lot of chances with the way they try to move the ball through central midfield. And when those chances don't come off against a good, disciplined, counterattacking team, they're vulnerable. They take a lot of chances with the positioning of their fullbacks. And when those fullbacks get caught out, they're vulnerable. And Dejan Jakovic, I thought, got maybe more grief online than he deserved because he actually covered pretty well a lot of times. But even at his best, he's not going to be the athletic presence that Walker Zimmerman was in terms of putting out those fires. The other thing is, like, they didn't have Eduard Atuesta, and, like, Guinella was pretty good, but he wasn't Atuesta level good. Mark Anthony Kay and Latif Blessing really struggled in central midfield. And then the other thing, the big thing, is that Carlos Vela, Brian Rodriguez, and Diego Rossi, when all three of those guys are out there at once, do not make each other better. They don't. And I don't think you could win the Champions League as an MLS team if all three of your DPs aren't out there making each other better and making the whole team better. And just the redundancy of having three wingers occupying those slots, it doesn't quite work.
Down 2-0. They'll go back to LAFC next week. Atlanta 1-1 with Motagua in Motagua. Who else? Joseph Martinez with the goal. A good result for them as well. They'll
was
come
that
home.
Joseph Martinez or was that Andy Warhol?
Ah, dude.
I thought it was Tyler.
The haircut is, the haircut is. It's interesting. It's very Joseph. We're not going to be able to tell you much about San Carlos NYCFC or Olympia in Seattle because they haven't played those games yet. If you're listening on Thursday night, both on FS2, 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. on Thursday. We'll talk about that a little bit more on Monday. All right, let's get to it. Our 2020 Western Conference preview. Let's empty our brains, go through all 13 teams, put 6 minutes on the clock, produce an Anders, and then give me a buzzer at the 1 minute mark so that we can do our predictions. Otherwise, you know how this goes. We will just ramble and ramble and ramble, and 2.5 hours later, we'll still be sitting here. So, worst to first, let's start with the team that hasn't played a game in Major League Soccer.
Ooh.
That's your cue to start the start the timer, Anders. Nashville SC, their expansion season out west. The guy who built this team, general manager Mike Jacobs. He came up with the team from USL. He was with Sporting Kansas City before that. Gary Smith, the Englishman, is the head coach. You'll remember him from his days with the Rapids. They won MLS Cup in 2009, I should say.
2010.
Mm. That one, I barely remember. I'm trying to wipe that.
2009 was RSL.
That's true.
So you just
Matt Congee, free Matt Congee.
I'm trying to forget that that MLS Cup anyway. So he was at Stevenage, Silverbacks. He had some time off. Nashville and USL. They have one DP, Hani Mukhtar. They have two spots open. They say they want a number nine. They maybe need one. Their core is Walker Zimmerman, Dax McCarty, Anibal Godoy, Randall Leal, and Mukhtar. So, Susanna, let's start here. What is Nashville, the soccer city, going to be? They've got Atlanta to start this thing off at home. That's awesome. That's starting to look like maybe a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
Which
like
is over.
How many thousand?
It would be over 55.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's starting to inch towards that point, whereas previously it looked like it might not get there. It's on Fox on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Big Fox, Nashville, Atlanta United. What is that day, that night? What is it going to be like?
It's going to be amazing. I mean, the thing about Nashville is that it is an entertainment town. You know, it's Music City, right? So everything that they are going to do ahead of this game, for this game, is going to be big. They're going to get, you know, big names to sing the national anthem and perform.
It's going
to, you know,
have.
Exactly. It's like, it's going to, this is going to be a show, right? So it's, that Nissan Stadium is going to be absolutely packed. It's going to be rocking. The excitement is real, like outside of what is happening on the field. Like, people have embraced this team already in Nashville. Now, what the product is going to look like is obviously yet to remain to be seen. So we know it's going to be a very defensive team. I think I look at Nashville and I don't think that they're going to be like a Cincinnati in year one. I think that they're going to be a little bit more productive than that. They're not going to score probably a ton of goals, but they're not going to give up a lot of goals. And so I think, you know, it's going to be fun no matter what, but I don't know that this is a team that's going to, you know, make a huge impact.
Respectable is what I think of.
Yes.
Put them on the spectrum, Doyle. Cincinnati to Minnesota to Atlanta to LAFC. I mean, you could go back to like your Orlandos or NYCFCs, you know, push it back as far as you want.
Just for context, Cincinnati was 24 points last year. Minnesota United was 36 points in their first year. They gave up 70 goals, though, which was a record at the time. Orlando City in 2015, everybody kind of forgets this because it's been almost completely downhill since then. But they had a very good expansion season. 44, 45 points.
That's where some of Adrian Heath's bitterness about that situation comes from.
Understandably. I think that's probably somewhere between Minnesota and Orlando City. Between 36 and 45 points is where Nashville's going to end up, but they're going to do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Because Minnesota was actually a relatively high-scoring team for an expansion team in 2017. I don't think that's going to happen for Nashville. I think they are going to be a very good defensive team. I mean, they have a best 11 center back. They have the kid who was obviously the best center back in the draft, and Jack Mayer. They went out and they got Nazarite, who's a high upside young Colombian center back. And they have two other center backs who were starters in the playoffs last year, in Dave Romney and Julian. Like, they have solidity there. They have upside there. They have solidity and upside in central midfield. And, oh, by the way, it looks like Gary Smith, who's always been known as a defensive coach, is playing not just with Anibal Godoy and Dax McCarty in central midfield, but also with Derek Jones, who, remember, a couple years ago was Tyler Adams' partner in central midfield on that great 2017 U20 U.S. national team. And Derek Jones is not a number 10, but he's kind of playing as one. Their goal is going to be to kill the game up the gut, to, you know, snatch a couple goals where they can, be it on set pieces or counterattacks, and just, like, not give up more than 40 goals. And I think that's a recipe for 40-ish points.
Kind of built for that, too. The attack, you're thinking, what, Randall Leal, who's looked pretty good in the preseason, he's got a pretty good track record with Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Then it's a question up top. Because, you know, who is it? Is it David Akam on a wing? Do they move Mukhtar to that wing to fit Jones into the midfield and get the structure a little bit?
Mukhtar is definitely going to start.
Yeah, I know. So if they move Jones up, it's probably going to be Mukhtar, Leal, and what, Dambaji? Daniel Rios, maybe?
Daniel Rios could be. I don't know.
Yeah. You're hoping that one of Baji, Rios, or Donlati, who also, by the way, Mike Jacobs has said, has looked really good in this preseason. It's like a dice roll. You're just saying, which of you is hot right now? Who looks good in training? Who's taking their chances? Oh, there's
no.
Our God, that goes so fast.
It does.
Okay, over-under. What's your points over-under on them?
The points over-under on Nashville SC, I have set at 35.5.
Oh, 35. I'm going to take the over just barely.
Okay.
Just barely.
David?
Somewhere between 35 and 40.
I'm going to go under.
You're going to go under.
Wow, yeah. Okay. Right? You think the goals are that big of an issue?
I think the goals are an issue, and I think in sitting deep and playing as a low block defensively, is Naza Reid and Zimmerman the right center backs for a system like that? Especially a guy in Zimmerman who's been the guy who's chased most of his career. So then it goes through the goals are an issue, and are you as stable defensively as we think you can be?
Okay.
Suze?
I hate this so much. I hate it.
How about this? In or out of the playoffs? I know we have our list.
They're
here.
Not. I don't think.
Oh, no. You made it too easy.
Don't think. No.
Okay, so give me the where.
Over or under.
Over or under.
Over or under. 35 points.
I'm going to take the over. Okay. I'll take the over. I don't think they make the playoffs. I have them in 10th.
I have them in 10th as well. All right. Nashville SC. We think they'll be respectable. We're not thinking they're going to make the playoffs. Start the timer on the Vancouver Whitecaps. 34 points. In 2019, they were last in the Western Conference, of course. That's why we're talking about them now. They made some big changes. New sporting director Axel Schuster is in after stints at Mainz and Schalke, basically to professionalize what they're doing there. Year two of Mark Dos Santos after basically nothing went right in year one, which is not entirely his fault. They have all three DP slots filled. Mbam Wong, Ali Adnan, Lucas Cavallini in for a reported $6 million, a club record. They made some TAM signings. Christian Dahomey from Ecuador, Leonard Owusu from Israel. He's a Ghanaian. And then they have a winger in from Hull City, and they lost Deno Henry to South Korea, and John Arisa was the captain until he wasn't, and he dipped out. So the big question here, Dave, what is a successful season for the Vancouver Whitecaps, and can they be successful if they don't make the playoffs and perhaps don't even come close to sniffing it?
So I'm going to say yes to the second question, because I think the answer to the first question is being 2019 San Jose, and obviously it ended really poorly for San Jose, but the idea in 2019 for them was, who are we, and can you feel better about the team at the end of the season than you felt going into it, because it's been forever since that's been the reality. So if you can come out of 2020 and Vancouver can say, okay, Mark Dos Santos has a style that we can buy players into, and he's the manager we can build around and believe in, and we're not going to have one foot in and one foot out as we buy players around that. If you have an idea of what system you play, if the crowd in any way enjoys what they've seen over the course of the year and comes to the stadium. And then the last part would be, do you have one or two keystone players that you can build around? You'd like one to be Cavallini. Hwangin-Bom is interesting.
He will be, by the way. Cavallini's awesome.
And I think Hwangin-Bom's interesting. It might be tough because if he has a good year, what does that mean for him going forward? But that is the goal for them, is to feel better about your team, whether you make the playoffs or not, coming out of the year as you do than you do right now.
To have an idea, I think. To have something that you're building around, because it's kind of felt like they've been throwing things against the wall, and that proved true with their transfer window 1 year ago, because basically none of those guys are back to oil. What do you think success will look like for this team? What does Mark Dos Santos try to land on here?
I think David kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of just like creating an identity that you could fall back on when the game starts to get away from you. You have that ability to say, like, okay, this is what we're trying to do. Everybody get on the same page. Let's go do that.
What do you think they're going to try to do?
Look, Mark Dos Santos always wanted to play like pretty expansive attacking soccer when he was coaching at the lower levels. I just don't think that I would be surprised if the Caps were able to do that and not concede a ton of goals in MLS. So I think they just have to be a lowish block. You know, maybe it's going to be a 4-3-3. Maybe it'll be a 4-3-2-1 and hit on the counter. And part of the great thing about Cavallini, his movement, and he's always engaged, and he could hold the ball up and release guys into space. And they have a couple of wingers who can run.
Would it waste him if they pressed? Because Schuster's background, he was with Jurgen Klopp when Klopp came up, and then Stuttgart is that. Now, I don't think you want that type of role to dictate the way your team plays necessarily. Do you think it wastes Cavallini as a signing if you play that way?
I don't think so. I think that actually plays to his strengths a little bit because his engine is fantastic. But you have to be really organized and on the same page to be a pressing team. And I think that if the Vancouver team I saw last year tried to press, they had given up 110 goals.
I am excited for this, Hwangin-Bom. I think that he has shown a lot both with South Korea in the offseason, now in the preseason. He seems extremely driven. When I sat down with him in L.A., you know, he had all the headlines about, oh, I do want to go to Europe, and he acknowledged that. But I think this is the year where he's like, okay, last year it all kind of blew up in our face. Now responsibility is kind of on me. I am one of the faces of this team. If I want to do what I want to do, I have to show the final product, the ability to control the game, things we saw in flashes last year, but like with everything with the Whitecaps, never saw consistently. Now, I think the big question for them is, Dahomey, is he any good? Is Owosu any good? Who's Reyna going to be this year? If Cavallini's out for whatever reason, can Montero, can Ricketts, can Theo Bear fill a hole? I mean, there are still so many question marks. Who's, like, Godoy and Cornelius, the center back, is that good enough? Kamiri barely played. They just signed the kid from, what, Serbia, I think it was, and he's like, maybe we'll keep him, maybe we won't if he's any good. Ali Adnan's an adventure, like a really fun one, but an adventure at left back. There are still so many question marks for this team that it's hard to put your finger on what they're going to be, where success comes from for them, how it all ends for the Vancouver Whitecaps. There's your buzzer.
That's Weeby, how it ends.
I feel like Weeby just listed the names of the players on the roster until he got to the buzzer.
Over under.
They're Weeby, a mystery.
Over under. 34.5 points.
Under.
Over.
Under.
Okay.
I have
just
them,
so you know, both of you are saying they'll be worse than they were last year.
I have them as the worst team in the Western Conference.
But you
hit the nail on the head. The last two seasons, I'm always like scratching my head. I'm like, who is Vancouver? I think like maybe they take a few strides to create an identity this year. I don't necessarily think that means results.
If they end up getting fewer points on the season, mm-hmm. But they actually do solidify that identity.
I feel like that's a win for them.
Yeah. Schuster's basically come out and said that. He's like, don't expect anything huge
realistic
from us this year. Yeah, be real about this. We just want to take steps. We want to look at our team and understand what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm waffling on the 34 points.
No. The timer went. It's time to go, dude.
The second timer never went.
Let's go.
There's a second timer.
Wait, why are there two?
Well, the start is on the next one, so we don't waste too much time.
Was there two in the last one? I missed it.
Sorry, Caps fan. I feel bad about that 34, but I do have you in 13th in the Western Conference. 11th last year was Sporting Kansas City on 38 points. It was their first year out of the playoffs since 2010. This is Peter Vermes' ship, still is, but now they got money, baby. They went out and signed Alan Pulido. $6 to $9 million, depends on who you believe on that transfer fee, but it is a club record, more than all the other transfer fees in the history of this club combined. All three DP spots are filled. Felipe Gutierrez, Johnny Russell, and Pulido. They went and got Gadi Kinda on TAM, another Israeli Premier League signing.
Israel high, baby.
Yeah, he's a box-to-box midfielder, slotting in there. Some other big ends for them. Kyrie Shelton is back on a three-year deal. And they went and got Roberto Puncic, who was out of contract in Europe, a center back to help bolster that group. Seth Sinovic is gone. Benny Failhaber is gone. Christian Namath is gone. PV guys are out. Doyle, here's the question. What is the bigger question mark for Sporting Kansas City? Alan Pulido and how many goals he'll score, or this back line / defense?
It's the defense. And I know Sporting Kansas City fans are going to go wild at me because they've been saying, for the past 5 years, been saying we need to sign a killer number nine, and they maybe have one in Pulido. But the context for that was they needed to get that number nine when they were a contender and had one of the best defenses in the league. Last year, they had one of the worst. They
gave second up worst in literally the entire.
They gave up 67 goals. Only Cincinnati gave up more than them last year. A lot of it was Ike Opara leaving, and Puncic is nominally the replacement for him, and we have no idea how that's going to translate. But also bear in mind that Matt Beisler, Graham Zusi, Roger Espinoza, Ilya Sanchez, these guys are all in their 30s now. Three of them in their mid-30s. Can they press the way Sporting Kansas City used to press? Can they just strangle the life out of
teams? I don't think they want to press. I don't think that's not the identity of this team. Can they defend in space when and if there's a turnover? Because
and the answer
they
last
as
year
clean
was
in
no
possession last year, and a lot of that came back to Ilya in the midfield. But they struggled.
Yeah.
When they got isolated, like not just struggled, like got torn to pieces.
Yep. No,
in those situations,
you're absolutely right. Now they still created a ton of chances.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if Pulido was on that team last year, he probably scores 20-ish goals. And that would have got them up to respectability, but that doesn't get them up to being a contender. And this Sporting Kansas City, they spent this past decade winning championships, whether the U.S. Open Cup, whether it was the MLS Cup in 2013, and they were always in the Shield. I mean, in 2018, they had 62 points. If you normal years, 62 points is right there in the Supporters' Shield hunt. Whether or not they get back there, I think it has way less to do with Pulido and way more to do with Puncak and the rest of that defense. And can they get on the same page and make it happen for them tactically, whether it's the press or whether it's defending with the ball or whether it's playing
whatever
block.
It is, just fix that aspect of it and let the
I agree
come.
With everything Doyle just said.
Smart.
But also,
so smart,
I mean, Doyle, I bow.
Look at us. Look at us.
Right. No, but they were also incredibly unlucky last year with injuries. I mean, there were things like that that came into play. They had CCL that just completely like wiped them out from the get-go of the season. They were never able to get their footing. So I think that there were a couple factors to go along with what you're saying that also contributed to their, I mean, the fact that they weren't in the playoffs last year was just so weird. It was so weird. And this is a team that's led by Peter Vermees. And let me tell you, I saw Peter Vermees on the last day of the season last year when they got shellacked by Dallas. And it was a game for them that didn't matter. But that man was angry. I'm telling you, I do not think he's going to allow what happened last year to happen again.
And they've made some cover for... They had a ton of injuries. You got phone calls going
Look
on.
Look at that.
Here, I'll talk here while you do your thing. They had a ton of injuries, but guys in their mid-30s get hurt. That's not a mistake. Now this year, they're currently, with Winston Reed on loan for a little while, they're six deep at center back, which I've never seen in MLS before. Jalen Lindsey, who
didn't
was out.
Pay attention to last year's Rapids, but anyway, continue.
Yeah, fair. Jalen Lindsey was out all of last year, so now you've got a little cover for Graham Zusi. They bring in kind of into midfield, so now you've got some more options. Felipe Hernandez can give you some minutes, and Kyrie Shelton up top. You have more legs in this team purely just to cover some of those injuries, to cover some of those guys breaking down. But I agree with what Doyle said, which is you wanted a pure striker to come in to get them over the top when they were a team that was hosting the second leg of a Western Conference championship, not to get them from the second worst defensive team in the league into being an MLS Cup contender. So Pulido will help a lot. And just the mentality of, you know, you're going to get goals, it makes life easier as a defender to not think one mistake ruins the game. But it doesn't take them from second to last to the best.
The foundation for Peter Vermees and Sporting KC has always been center backs, number six.
Yeah.
There are still big questions at all three of those spots right now. Okay, over-under predictions time. What do you got, Doyle? What is your point total?
48.5.
48.5. I have Sporting Kansas City sixth place in the Western Conference. So they're right around that. Like, that's right at that number.
Yeah.
I'm going to say over barely. Barely over. It's going to be floating around right in that zone, though, for me.
I have them over. I also have them sixth in the West, and I think they'll actually get like 51, 52.
Yeah, over. I have them in fifth.
Yeah. Peter Vermees plus investment should be... That should work.
Should be an MLS playoff team.
Yeah, we've all wanted to see that over the years. Well, they've gotten the investment now. I guess I should have made the line. But if I had made it 50.5, then it would have been more interesting.
Yeah, well, it was still pretty interesting. Okay, time to keep it moving. Houston Dynamo are up. Start the six-minute clock. Producing Anders. They were 10th in the Western Conference last year. 40 points. Wilmer Cabrera lost his job. Davey Arnaud was the interim coach. He did not keep that job. And it's Tab Ramos, who is the new head coach of the Houston Dynamo. It's his first pro job. He's been waiting for this moment for a long, long time. He has two DPs, Albert Elise and Tomas Martinez. They got some TAM players this offseason. Darwin Quintero from Minnesota United, one of those.
Is Quintero not a DP for them?
I don't believe so, no.
Cool.
That was part of that deal. And then a new goalkeeper from Hoffenheim. Marco Marich. Victor Cabrera, big in right there for the Houston Dynamo. Doyle.
Oh, God.
Zarek Valentin. Big outs. DeMarcus Beasley, the legend. Romo Kyoto to Montreal. And the other big out that didn't happen was Minotas or Elise leaving. So, big question, Dave. What does Tab Ramos see in his mind's eye when he sees this Houston Dynamo team? Who will the Dynamo be? Who will Tab be in his first year as a professional head coach?
Well, I've already been memed this week for
you have.
Considering things, so I don't want to get stuck again.
Memed? Memo?
Memed?
I'm going to walk away. I'm going to walk away right now. We're killing the momentum of this.
What I've been told is that he wants a team that presses high, that plays with a higher back line, that stays connected and kind of forces the issue in games. I've never seen him do that with the youth national team. We talked about that a little bit.
They did start doing that with the 2019 cycle.
Okay, fine. But he had 8 years and it took him 7.5 years to get there. Now, youth national team's different. You're not with a team week in and week out. You can't sign whatever weaknesses or holes you have, and you can't fill in. So I think that's his idea. How much of that plays out in year one, how much of that plays out in the first 2 or 3 months, I don't know. From a pure talent point of view, this was a team that wasn't very good last year, and I don't think they're much better. They haven't filled the holes that worry me. They've had a little bit more depth with Darwin Quintero up top, but they are the same issues they had in 2019, they have still in 2020.
Well, one of the issues they had, well, I guess two of the issues they had in 2019 were that Elise and Minotas didn't look super engaged. Once spring was done and they had that great start, both those guys kind of fell off. Minotas eventually picked it back up. He had decent stats last year. But when I look at teams in the middle or lower third of the pack, often the question is, like, do they have these high-level match winners who can go out there? Like, you have to win, if you're going to compete, 5 or 6 games throughout the year just based on having superior talent. And with Elise and Minotas, the Dynamo are one of the few kind of like bottom teams that actually do have that talent. Minotas, there's a 25 goal scorer in there somewhere. With Elise, there's a best 11 winger in there somewhere. We've seen these guys do it for months at a time in the past. And I think with Todd Ramos, it's like, can he get that out of them in a way that Wilmer Cabrera, other than 2017, couldn't?
And here's the big sell for Elise, which is his contract's up at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So what's your future? And if you're ever going to inspire that player to play that way for a year, because he's not a best 11 player, because one of the parts of being a great player is consistency and doing it every week. And he has never shown that, but he does have the talent. He has the athletic ability. He has the skill on the ball. He has the vision at times. If this is the year and they say to him, hey, listen, your future's in your hands, and Todd Ramos says, here's your opening, this is what I want from you, and maybe if they play a little bit higher up the field, or if they press, his athleticism comes out even more at times. But if he can be that player, they have an opportunity, but they still are arguably the weakest team at center back.
That's what I was going to say. Can they play high up the field when it's Minor Figueroa? I love Minor Figueroa, but when it's Minor Figueroa and probably Struna, Alejandro Fuenmayor. Fuenmayor has not shown what they thought he would show, and then Victor Cabrera is Victor Cabrera. If that's your top four and you want to play half the field, I start to have question marks about whether that's going to be effective. I also wonder how big of a signing Darwin Quintero actually is.
Yeah.
Because Darwin Quintero couldn't get on the field for a Minnesota team that needed goals in big moments
He got on the field.
Okay, he couldn't get on the field in the biggest moments when you would expect a player like Darwin Quintero to be the first player that you put on the field. He wasn't there.
I mean, he didn't start. He played in those games, but they didn't score. But like, Darwin Quintero is still an attacking force.
We have
seen that. The question is, does he take so much off the table?
Is he a starting attacking force?
That is the question.
But,
and if he's a starter, can you start him at left wing in a high pressing 4-3-3? I don't think so.
No, that doesn't fit what he is. But this team had no depth last year, and we're not asking Darwin Quintero to start MLS Cup. There's not a team that's going to be in it. The question back to Doyle's point, though, but the question back to Doyle's point is, can he help them beat Montreal at home on July 8th in a midweek game when Elise doesn't show up? And he does have that potential.
Over under. This is basically the same team plus Darwin Quintero that missed the playoffs last year.
And Victor Cabrera.
Suze, I'm starting with you. 41.5 points.
Under.
I'm going to go. I have them in 11th, so like they're basically sitting on that number right now for me. It's like right there. It's basically a coin flip. I'm going to say over and like just barely, like 42 points outside of the playoffs.
And you have to think some of the bump is just new coach, new situation.
So
for the young guys, I'm going under.
Going
I was just helping weave.
So when you said bump,
but I was just helping weave.
There's a bump here, but for sure under.
You got it.
Before the buzzer sounds, where are you?
I'm at 41.5 points.
So these over-unders are basically your predictions. It's like, bam.
Yeah, I went from the heart with this one.
What place is that in the West for you?
Yeah.
What in the standings?
Oh, where did I have them in the standings? I had them.
I have them 11th.
I have them 12th. I have them last.
Oh, no.
Ooh.
Oh, no. And on that note, we will move on to the next team on our list. The Colorado Rapids start the timer, producing unders, 42 points in 2019, ninth in the Western Conference. But they had a huge, huge surge under Connor Casey and Robin Fraser did not go well under Anthony Hudson. That has been well documented, but they rose up the table. They signed a DP in the offseason after getting rid of the DPs that didn't play. Yunus Namli is their one DP. They got Nicholas Benizet from Toronto FC on TAM. Austin Trusty in a big trade. They signed Lawless Abubakar permanently after trading for him from Columbus. Drew Moore is in to provide guidance, and Brian Galvan will come in the summer, a young DP from Argentina. The big out is Tim Howard. I guess you could say also Shakel Jengai, just because he was occupying a DP spot. The big question here is, will the Connor Casey, Robin Fraser bump carry over? Or, as you so smartly put it in the meeting prior to this podcast.
Smartishly put it.
Smartishly?
Yes, smartishly.
Okay. Are they Montreal from 2019, where we sat at this table basically a year ago and said, man, Montreal's form under Remy Gard the second half of 2018 was so good that this team has it figured out. They're going to come over, they're going to carry that over, and they're going to be a force in the Eastern Conference. Will the bump carry over? Without huge changes, it must be said, some important ones, Trusty and Namli, or is this still going to be sort of a middle back half team that is just trying to be respectable? Anybody want to go out there? I don't want to say anything because I'm so hopeful for the Rapids, but yeah. Reality in my mind says that they will not take the big jump. They will take a jump, so, but their pace from last year will not be replicable.
I went through all the goals they conceded under Robin Fraser. I looked at their underlying numbers, which were not great. Even under Robin Fraser, they more often than not lost the expected goals battle. And then on beyond that, I don't think their set piece dominance is replicable. They scored 17 goals off of set pieces last year. It's tough to do that year after year. So while my heart says, yeah, Rapids, 55 points, play us, my head and the data says this is not a playoff
team. Now, they'll argue that they'll create more in open play because obviously, Robin Fraser, he wants wingers that can take guys on 1v1 and create chances coming inside. Nicholas Benizet fits into that fairly perfectly. And then Yunus Namli is their, I guess, designated player signing, who they believe gives them a step up at number 10. So they think that they're going to create more opportunities throughout the game overall without taking a step back, they hope, defensively. And I think all of that is reasonable. The reason I hesitated is because I have them as my first team out of the playoffs, which is what happened to them last year. Now, I think there'll be a lot of good soccer played under them, and I think there's a lot of young pieces that if they feel good about going forward, there's positive momentum coming out of the season, and a tight playoff race is what you want for young guys to have to perform week in and week out. But on pure talent, to what Doyle said in the Houston conversation, do you have guys who are going to win you 10 to 15 points by themselves? I don't know that player exists on this team.
So when you talked about this team, Doyle, your voice softened. I could just kind of feel you not want to say what you were saying.
Yeah.
And Susanna, that's kind of where this Rapids team is, right? It's a team that everybody wants to root for because you have Sam Vines and Austin Trusty, and Abubakar is one of the most joyful people in the league. And, you know, Kellen Acosta, can he be resurgent? But Bassett, if
Clint
he can.
Clint Irwin finally
yeah, there are a lot
chance,
of, like, yeah. Jonathan Lewis, will yeah. he be that guy now?
Good guys.
Hey, Chinashiki yeah. was rookie of the year, and Rubio is fun to watch.
And also Robin Fraser.
But, yeah. but maybe it's not quite their year. It feels like a team everybody will root for, but
yeah.
may not in the end be, you know, above the red line. Let's
I
say.
Think we can kind of talk about them. Not in the it's a different conversation, but in the same way as we were talking about like a Vancouver, where it's like just kind of being self aware and being realistic about what you actually can achieve. I think that they're moving in a great direction. I think like. But this is sort of like year one and a half of this rebuilding
yeah.
project, and so I think I think they're I have them like us. I have them just not quite making
just
it,
just
a smidge out. But there's going to be fun moments. It's going to be an improved season overall for Colorado. It's not quite there, not quite.
Jonathan Lewis, does he take the step forward this year?
I mean, right now he's fighting for a starting job again. Sam Nicholson's been very good in preseason. They have Benizet. They have Shinyashiki. They got a lot of depth, and
Rubio
I think that's going to help him. Rubio can play on the wing, yeah. So, you know, it's up to him, and it's up to Robin Fraser to pick the right team every week.
All right, what's your over-under on points?
45.5 points.
Ooh.
45.5. I have Colorado in ninth, so I'm going to say barely under. I'm going to say 45, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say over, which is, to my point, I think they're better than last year, but they still miss out on the playoffs, which last year, 48 was the line in the Western Conference.
What he said.
Boom.
I have them in eighth.
They're not going to lose 11 straight games.
But you're going over?
Huh? Yes.
You're going over 45 and a half.
Yep.
Okay.
We all have them out of the playoffs, though.
Yeah.
We do now.
But they could be one of the, like, you know, like just that one of those teams you don't know could come down to the final day. You don't know.
Right here
which would be
week.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Which would be awesome. If they're in
they're
a playoff
They're going to be race. In a conversation. I guarantee you at the end of the season, they're going to be in a conversation. Will they, won't they?
Yeah. Everybody will be rooting for them down the stretch.
Yes. And what happened last year, none of us had SKC out and just the floor fell out. Someone has to step into that void. It will happen this year because we are always wrong. And it's MLS, and I think they're fairly poised. I think them and RSL potentially are the two poised. To
truer words never spoken.
It's the other way around. It's MLS, and we're always wrong.
Mm.
Either way, it doesn't matter. San Jose
sounded wrong to me.
Yeah.
That was
eighth
smart.
Eighth place last year, 44 points. Didn't quite make it. Six straight losses, I believe it was, down the stretch. Mateus Almeida is back for his second year. The project continues despite flirtations from Liga MX. Christian Espinoza is one of the DPs that got that thing done permanently in the offseason. Vaco is a DP. Osvaldo Alanis is their TAM signing this offseason. Big outs, none really. Big ins, other than Alanis, none really. Big question, Doyle, did they do enough this offseason to take that step forward? We all know who they are, what they want to be, who the figurehead is. It's very emotional. It's different than anything that anybody else in this league is doing with the man marking. Did they do enough in the offseason, and can the system take them forward in year two?
The answer to that first question is no. And they did a good job to bring in Alanis, who should be a good center back in this league. And you know, locking down Espinoza long term makes a lot of sense. But this is a team that outplayed their opponents really often down the stretch and did not have the final third difference makers, did not have the guys who could kill the game off, did not have the guys who could come up with crucial goals in those biggest moments, and they just brought back the same team. And I don't know why you would expect in 2020 for that group, which includes a now 37-year-old goal scorer, and Wando's a legend, and he was amazing last year. But if Wando is your only goal scorer in this version of MLS, which is much better than last year's version, because just look at the amount of money teams have spent throughout the league, and especially in the Western Conference, there might be some bump in terms of cohesion and buy-in to the system. There might be some more solidity, especially because it looks like they're playing a 4-4-2 now. So kind of like Simeone-esque in terms of where they're going to set their block, though obviously still with man-marking principles. So like that all sounds good, but eventually you need to have Nico Ladero just scoring a banger on the run, or you need to have Joseph Martinez dunking on somebody. You need to have guys who can go out there and win the game.
You need that to win MLS Cup. They need to make the playoffs, and they would argue with what Weeby said from the start, which is they only made one big signing in Alanis. They would say Carlos Fierro, who they signed at the end of last year's summer window, is one of those big signings. They think he's a legitimate Chivas player that's now coming to play on their team. He had some trouble settling. I think he had some family issues where he wasn't really with the team as soon as they thought he would be. They think that he's an upgrade at that winger spot, creating opportunities out of nowhere. Espinoza was fairly elite at that for a large stretch of last year. Vaco had stretches as well. They didn't have enough to fill a full season's worth of it. Hence, you have seven games down the stretch where you lose every game but outplay teams. So Fierro is expected to bring a certain level of that. You'd hope Yule takes a step going forward. Does Lima or Thompson take a step as fullback, whichever one gets the starting spot? Marcos Lopez is just 20 years old. Does he take a step as well? So there is more internal work that can be done under Almeida in that the players individually can get better besides just cohesion from the group. But it still comes down to it's going to be a battle and tough every single game. And can they gut it out enough to believe that they're going to make the playoffs?
Feels like they're on the knife edge a lot, both in the way that they play and sort of the talent level compared to the rest of the league. I think the big question is, is their step forward with the system and who they are and maybe the fitness that's required and some of the little edges that they have to find and get, is that step bigger than the step the rest of the league is going to take after having a year to see it and scout it and exploit it
well put, yeah.
and put better players up against it and say, okay, we know what you want to do. We know how to get around it. We saw teams rip this apart last year. There were certainly times where you outplayed people and ran them off the field. But for San Jose, it's just such a knife edge. And I never know which day it's going to be. Is it going to be the day where they're not quite on it and so they just get worked? Or they're so dominant and so much more committed that the other team just gets run off the field. I'm not sure about it. Wando, 10 goals this year. Baron T, my first
Baron
T.
Wow, I love it, Weavey.
Put it straight down. Double digits, baby. Because who else is going to get the double digits?
Don't forget.
I mean, it's been interesting to see. Look, all their scrimmages have been behind closed doors, but it seems like they're playing with two up front. So maybe Rios, who they brought in the middle of last year, though he's never really been a goal scorer. Maybe Danny Huson starts next to Wando, or maybe it's back to the 4-1-4-1, and it's Fierro or Vaco or some Espinoza.
More good Vaco or more bad Vaco? Which one do we see more of?
I think that question is just Vaco, Vaco.
Okay, guys. That's what's your points over under here?
Of Vaco. Where do we have? 44.5. They had 44 points last year. In 2018, they had 21 points.
Yeah.
2019, they had 44 points. Over-under is 44.5.
Shouldn't the over-under be 65 based on the jumps that they go year for year?
I'm going to go over and just barely. I have them at the bottom of the West, though. I just, for whatever reason, it's that knife edge, and I kind of think the rest of the league is going to catch up more than San Jose is going to jump ahead.
Suze?
Under, yeah. I have them in ninth.
I also have them in ninth. I have them under. Similar to Weeby, knife said. Very closely. I think they'll be around.
Yeah, they'll be right around
44 points.
Yeah,
unless they make some crazy summer signing, you know.
Which it doesn't feel like probably.
Diego Linus.
You heard it here first. That's some good tape.
Sorry, there was a buzzer in there. I couldn't hear.
Just who'd you say? What'd you say?
Which Mexican youth superstar did you mention?
All right, let's take a quick break from the previews and talk MLS fantasy. I am committed, Ben. I will not forget to set my...
Every year.
Yeah. I'm going to forget.
Every year.
Set my fate in this thing. Walk us through what the game looks like this year, why people should play.
We made a lot of changes this year. I think the past couple years...
Hold on. How responsible are you for this? If people have beef...
I did not come up with a lot. Most of these ideas. our crack development team
okay.
Came up with all these ideas.
So this is Cole. This is a Cole joint.
I wasn't dropping names.
Okay.
Cole and James, sure.
That's the way this works.
Cole and James, sure. Yeah, you can.
But if it goes well, he'll take credit.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way it works. I mean, I'm the face of fantasy. So. That's why that works. So, you know, the past couple of years, we've split the season in two. That is gone. We are no longer doing that. What is replacing that? We love CONCACAF Champions League as one of the creators of CCL Fever. We now have FCL Fever. Fantasy Champions League is here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
That's a genuine reaction, everyone. So we split up the season into four qualifiers and the Champions League, the top 50 from the four qualifiers. It's about 6 weeks are qualifiers. Top 50 from each of those qualify for the Champions League at the end of the season, 6 or 7 weeks, I believe.
So it's kind of like the Belgian League.
Yeah, that's kind of what it's like, honestly. So the top 200 players can qualify for the Champions League. Winner gets 1,500, and then just prizes all the way down. I don't forget what the number goes down to.
Is that 1,500 cold cash, or is that like straight to MLS store?
I'm not 100%. It's not MLS store, but I'm not going to say what it is otherwise.
Okay.
But if I have a league with my friends...
You can still...
Runs all the year through.
Yeah, and then we still have an overall champion, too, which also gets you $1,500. So you can technically, if you win that and it's Champions League, you win $3,000.
It's a brown bag or a suitcase? How does that get delivered?
I will personally maybe put in a brown bag.
Unmarked bills? Okay. So what's the difference in sort of this? Is there a difference in scoring? I saw there was something about you. There's no... Players don't appreciate? Your bank doesn't... You don't get to hold on to, like, your earnings.
So... The players' prices will still go up and down. Your budget will not go up and down. Your budget is set at $125 million. Doyle's gonna love this. Fantasy Internet FC, RIP, but
your budget doesn't go up and down, huh?
Yeah, budget does not go up and down. So you're not really playing. You know, not that we changed the rules a few years ago. So you're not really playing that way anyway.
The experts can't beat you down because they've built up a bank of $150 million when you're still sitting at $125 million.
This should be more beneficial for. Players who are not always attuned to what is going on, or not the high, you know, the top top 200 players. So, like, this would be great for Weeby.
Yes, exactly.
So, 125. So at the beginning of the season, it's going to be great. You can have your pick of whatever player you could possibly want because the player prices are the same as they've always been to start the season. But at the end of the season, it's going to be tight. You'll have, you'll have to have three or four players who are probably $4 million or, really low prices.
Okay.
To go along with that, there are still double game weeks, but only the highest score from those two games will count. So there's no more a player scoring 50 points in a week. That will no longer happen.
So if Carlos Vela gets a hat trick on Wednesday and a hat trick on Saturday, you only get one of those.
Correct. So it should open up for a little bit more strategy. So instead of even when it was, Montreal Vancouver double game, we still kind of felt like
everybody had Montreal and Vancouver. You had to
have those players. Yeah. That's no longer the case. You can have, I think it's always better to have two bites of the apple. So there's still going to be a lot of people picking.
Is that
Is it a Britishism?
I don't know. When you're in a vest like that, they just naturally flow out of your mouth.
How was London?
Just got back from a fox hunt.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Fulham.
Release the hounds.
You enjoyed the Champo.
I mean, obviously, why would I go to a Premier League game? I don't want to go to a Champo game. Like that one. So better to have two bites of the apple, but it definitely opens up more options there. You don't have to have those double game week players to be at the top of the leaderboards and beat and win the head-to-head leagues.
Okay. MLSsoccer.com. Go sign up. Get your team made. We will get our league created and I'll do my best to play every single week. Doyle's better.
Yeah, what happened to all those, you guys did at the beginning of the season, you guys did the garbage bag with all the jerseys.
Yeah.
And then about 10 to 12 weeks in, about the time we probably stopped playing, you guys stopped doing that.
I think it's fair to blame Anders.
Yeah, I think it's probably aren't. But, I mean, we have, like, probably 20 winners out there.
Yeah, nothing to talk
time
about
I get
here.
Don't have jerseys.
No, we definitely do because they're in our email.
No. Time to get back to our Western Conference previews. Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate all the insight that you've brought here in this segment about MLS Fantasy. All right, so sign up for Fantasy, and let's talk FC Dallas. 48 points, 7th in the West in 2019. Lucci Gonzalez, a good year one. Now it's time
Gang.
Yeah, now it's time for year two. Didn't know where you're going with that. Same for the guys building the roster. It's their second year as well. Their DPs, Santiago Mosquera, Brian Acosta, and then Frank O'Hara in the summer. They brought in Thiago Santos, a number 6 on TAM from Brazil, and they also brought in Fafa Picot this offseason. Big outs, Dombaji, Ja'Cory Hayes, and then they've moved on from Pablo Arangues and Christian Coleman.
You could have just said none.
Correct. Hey, don't talk about Ja'Cory Hayes like that.
Oh, Ja'Cory's my boy, and goes into why Minnesota had one of the best offseasons, but you started with Dombaji, so don't. Matt Doyle's
Dombaji. He's getting double digits this year. That's not a guarantee, but maybe somebody will go out on that limb in our prediction special. Here's the question, Dave. How does Lucci and FC Dallas take a step forward? More specifically, do we believe in the attack?
Yeah, I believe in the attack because one of the things that was their issue was center forward last year, and you have Andrasik, who ended the year strong, got his debut at the international level, started to fit in a little bit better. That's your guy when you're going to possess the ball, when you're going to control the game.
He's your guy at home.
Most likely.
Yeah.
You've got Jesus Ferreira, who can fill in spots for him, sometimes as a false nine, but I think he has the ability to hold up, lay it off, create for people. And they only have to get you halfway through the season because then you've got a Liga MX veteran coming in and Frank O'Hara. And I'm not saying Frank O'Hara is going to roll in and be, Raul Ruiz Diaz in year one and, pouring goals immediately. But the point is, between the three of them, you've got enough quality that if someone will be on form, and if Lucci Gonzalez can get his rotations right, they'll have enough goal scoring at that center forward spot on top of the fact that they've improved around it. And you've got young guys who you're looking at. You're not hoping. You're looking at to take a step forward this year.
How much hope do you have here, Susanna, as you look at this young roster, as you think about that Seattle series where it was like, oh, damn, if FC Dallas brings this intensity to every game, FC Dallas is going to be climbing the table next year.
They showed so much character. And, after that game, it was actually heartbreaking to see those guys, literally in tears. And I think that left such a bitter taste in their mouth. And I think like that year of experience and that heartbreak is so important. I think it's really, really important for a team like Dallas to know what that feels like.
It's a little bittersweet, right?
Completely.
It's bitter, but there's also the feeling of
look what we did. Look what we did. We were right there. And, they end up losing to Seattle Sounders, who go on to win the whole, should have beat them.
Yeah.
I love Luchy Gonzalez so much. I love what he has done with this group. I think that having that experience last year, having him in charge and having, you know, that same young core sort of back, I think that they're going to be in that mix.
Here's
once
the question
again.
For you I have. Who has the better season of their young, promising players? Jesus Ferreira, Paxton Pomykal, or let's say Brandon Cervagna as just a third there?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard not to say Paxton Pomykal, right? Like, guys, he's so freaking good. Yeah. He's so freaking good, though. I mean, he's already like the best player on the team. I don't know. Jesus Ferreira.
Jesus Ferreira has been awesome.
Yes.
The reason not to say Pomykal is that he's missed health, basically, the past 3 or 4 months.
But he's what? How old is he?
20.
Yeah. He's a young buck. He's strong. They bounce back. They bounce back, those kids.
Yeah, not like us in our old age.
No.
Does it remind anybody of like 2014 Dallas a little bit? When Pareja got there the first year, it was a young team, and then they took a big step forward in 2015, and they became the first. They 60 points and just missed out on the Shield in 2015. 2016, that 60 points again, they won it. It was still that young core. That's kind of what I see here, except I think they just play much prettier soccer under Lucci than they ever did under Pareja.
This team has a really high ceiling to me.
No, high floor. Oh, high ceiling?
I think it has a high ceiling in the second half of the year when Jara comes in. Because I think they'll have the first half of the year to sort of figure out the rotations, to figure out where it all fits, because they're trying to figure out, where's Ferreira play?
Yeah.
Is he like a second forward? Is he more of a number 10? Is he just your out-and-out nine in certain situations? How's Barrios fit in? The midfield between Acosta and Cervagna and Pomykal and Santos and maybe even Cerillo in that. Like, Lucci has about 4 or 5 months to tinker and get everything right until he gets that final piece in. And the nice thing is they don't have to worry at all about the back line.
Yeah.
From left to right, Hollingshead, Ziegler, Hedges, Cannon. You don't even have to, like, you don't have to think about that. And that is such a luxury to have. So figure out
also,
that front.
Also, and I mentioned it with Houston, you can't have 11 good players. You shouldn't walk into a season anymore in MLS and say, this is our lineup day in and day out. This is our lineup for our best games. Like, you need guys competing for spots, and you need depth, because Jesus Ferreira and Paxton Pomykal are going to an Olympic qualifying, because you've got guys who are going to be in World Cup qualifying or Copa America, whatever it is that you lose guys for.
All right, I'm feeling like I feel like I set the line too low here, the way everybody's raving. 51.5 points.
I have them fifth in the Western Conference, and I know I said, you know, ceiling, floor, whatever, they have a high one, but that's more along the lines of, I think, come playoff time, Lucci will have them firing. So 51 seems about right to me. I'm going to say barely over.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing. I like this team, and I mentioned it, though. I think they have one of the highest floors because of the way they're built at the back and the experience they have and depth they have in midfield.
51 points, over, under,
51,
Suze.
Okay.
51.5.
Sorry.
I'm going to say under, but I have them at seventh in the same spot they finished last year.
Okay, so into the playoffs.
Yes.
Into the playoffs.
So I'm clear. Weeby and Goss were over, and Suze was on. Okay.
Oh, you're documenting
this.
Oh,
I'm documenting.
I was not paying attention. Normally you're over here like in your secret Slack groups just typing throughout the show. So I just figured that was
the U.S. soccer dark web.
Uh-huh. Sixth in the Western Conference last year were the Portland Timbers on 49 points. They're running it all back, baby. Gavin and Gio doing their things. All three DP spots filled. Sebastian Blanco, Yimi Chara, and Nizgoda comes in at that number 9 spot. Tam, they got Felipe Mora, which would normally be a DP signing, but they got him on Tam. Good work there. Dario Zuparic is the new center back on Tam. And then Diego Valeri was converted. Big outs here. I have Brian Fernandez. And then Zarek Valentin was such a big part of this club from a cultural standpoint that he's a big out as well. Played a lot of big minutes. And also explained to people away goals 2 years ago. So he was very important. Will those new signings pay off, Suze? What do you think?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I'm not just saying that because I picked Portland to win the whole darn thing last year, and then that I'm still Team Timbers here. I'm looking at all these names. What they needed was somebody to actually score, and I like what they have done. I think they've done, I'm here for it. Yep. Portland. Feel good. I feel good. Don't prove me wrong again, please.
They needed somebody to score, but they also needed somebody to create chances.
Yeah.
Have good they brought chances. In the right players to create those chances? So and how do they get all those players on the field at the same time? Because this was Team Cross.
Yeah. That's the thing. I don't think it's the players. I think it was the system that Jeff Savarese has wanted to run, which is get it wide and swing crosses in. They set the league record for most crosses in a season last year. They didn't have any ideas against any teams that played in a low block except to just whip it into the mixer. And so they added a really good winger in Yimi Chara who can cross the ball, and they added two center forwards who, you know, can probably put the ball into the net. Does that mean then it's a 4-4-2? And if it's a 4-4-2, what do you do with Diego Valeri? How do you get Valeri, Chara, and Sebastian Blanco onto the field if you're going to play with two forwards as well? Because you're not going to play Blanco and Chara as wingbacks in a 3-5-2. So there are some personnel issues, but again, this is what you want. You want to have good personnel issues where it's like we have too many good players and we got to figure out the best ones to put on the field.
I agree with what Doyle said. This seemed to me, outside of Blanco, there's no one who can take a defender out of the game. There's no one who shifts the way you move. It's all straight line for them. It's athleticism. It's power. It's right down the middle. And they brought in two forwards who probably do less in buildup than Brian Fernandez did for you. The only question mark is, if Brian Fernandez didn't fall off the face of the earth last year, where would they have ended up? Because they actually netted out as like fifth in the West in goals. If Fernandez had been in the team and a part of what they did, which you assume between these Goda and Mora.
Let me hijack this comment then. How much do we believe in their defense? Because Clark was brilliant last year.
That's a bigger question mark to me. I do not like their center backs. I don't think
Mabiala and Zuparic, we know nothing about.
I don't think Mabiala is in that tier of six or seven center backs in MLS where it doesn't matter who plays next to them. They're good enough to pick up the slack and carry them. And so if they have to open up the game a little bit more to create opportunities,
and they're gonna have to do that because nobody's going to come up at the field against them. Everybody's going to sit back and say, okay, we know you can't create against the packed in defense. We're going to sit back and we're going to counter you. We're not going to let you do what you did to the entire league for most of the 2010s, right? At this point, if you're letting Diego Valeri lead a counterattack, you're a moron. You've seen this guy. He's brilliant when he gets into transition. Nobody's going to let them do that this year.
No, they shouldn't. So if you're Gio Savarese, what do you do? What should you do? What would you do? When you write the columns when they're still whipping the ball in, or if they're doing that, what are you going to be saying they should be doing?
I'm going to say they should stop doing that. You have to be patient. You have to, be a little bit more coordinated in your movement. It helps to play guys in their right positions, which I don't think they did a lot of last year. Getting Chara is going to help because while you're right that he's not like a pure 1v1 merchant, he's still pretty good. And he also has the speed to get around the outside and then play a telling ball. Whereas it was Andy Polo a lot. It was not.
No, the talent is better, but the issue that we have with Portland, which I think we touch on sometimes, is like, it's not good. They need to change it. They change it. It doesn't go well. They go back to it. It's because they don't work on they're not spending preseason working on their movement and patterns in possession to break teams down. So when they go to it on July 10th, it doesn't help because they have not worked on it. It's not what the team's built on. And then they go back to what has worked on for them because that's who they are.
Points over under
52.5. I'm starting with you, Suze.
I will say over, and I've got him in third.
Okay,
I have him in fourth, and so I think 52.5. I'm going to say over to be in fourth place in the Western Conference.
I am going under, and I have them in seventh place in the Western Conference.
I think their talent level is high enough.
Wow.
You know, if you kind of compare that with the earthquakes, like people know what they might want to do. Well, they haven't figured out.
Wait, why are you comparing them to the earthquakes?
Just in the sense that people know what they want to do.
But the earthquakes aren't making the playoffs.
Yeah, because they don't have as much talent.
Yeah, but compare them to SKC and FC Dallas and Seattle and Minnesota. Those are the teams you have to compare them with.
No, I'm comparing in style. Anyway. Cool. I said over.
So Weeby,
hold on. Can I actually also
wait,
ask?
Hang.
We're putting. He's like marking down what we're doing, what we say, but he doesn't have to actually say the over.
I literally I'm making the lines.
What
and
thinks.
I, unlike you, I actually made my preseason predictions for where teams
I'm doing
would
it right
finish
now.
In the stand.
I'm
yeah, well, we
it.
Published
no,
that.
No, 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 no. Doyle, Weeby just put it down.
Published that a week ago.
Weeby just put it down. He thinks Portland will be better than San Jose. That's his hard
Bingo.
Line.
Guarantee.
Boom. Guaranteed right there.
It's a guarantee.
Guaranteed
That's
right there.
Guarantee.
Sorry.
LA
Sorry,
Galaxy,
Ben.
Fifth place in the Western Conference on 51 points. Dennis Teclosa and Guillermo Bachelotto enter year two together. Jonah Dos Santos, Christian Pavone, and Chicharito. Are their designated players? They got Alexander Katai on TAM. Nice little value deal there. Sasha Kleshin in. Emiliano Insua in. Danny Acosta was in, but then he did his knee in preseason. It's tough to hear that. Hope you get better soon, Danny. Big outs. Zlatan and Roman Alessandrini, who hasn't played for a while. So here's the big question.
Do you want to just take a minute and
yeah.
work just through
collect your thoughts.
Emotions?
Collect
yeah.
your thoughts, and I'm going to ask the question here, and I'm going to ask
yes.
it of you.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Is this team going to be better without Zlatan? And is it because they no longer have Zlatan?
This team, I've been on record saying, will be better without Zlatan. They will not have a dominant goal scorer. They will not have a... I think they'll have a dominant attacking presence that I think will be Christian
Pavone.
You don't
Pavone.
Think you don't think, you don't think Chicharito's going to score a butt-ton of goals?
I do think he's going to score a butt-ton of goals, but when I think dominant goal scorer, I think you're going to be at that 25-goal mark, and I actually don't think Chicharito's going to be at that
wow.
mark. I think he's going to be more in the like 18 to 20, 21 mark. Am I crazy to think that?
No, I don't think... I have him around 22, 23, which I would put as a dominant goal scorer.
Yeah, I would... Okay, fine. That would probably be dominant, but I guess in my mind right now, maybe I'm like slow playing it or just letting my LA Galaxy / Landon Donovan shrine slowly sort of build up its power. I just feel like it's going to be more a collection this year. My big question mark for them, they will be better. How much better will they be? Well, can they get Alan Franco over the line? Alan Franco, in case you're not paying attention, is the Independiente center back who's kind of on the fringes of the Argentine National League, kind of like Nico Figal, who signed with Inter Miami. I think they're both Independiente,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're trying to get it done. He's not training right now for Independiente. If they sign him, I feel much, much better about the fact that I have them in third place in the Western Conference right now.
If I'm
they
sold.
Don't, I feel much less confident because they just shipped goals, 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 goals last year, and they're not that deep up top, and they have holes in the back line.
I'm sold on the LA Galaxy.
Sell
I
me.
Agree with you on Alan Franco. My other point is if they don't, there's no one in the league I trust more to have the next guy up and fix it than Dennis Teclosa. And I think the answers to Doyle's questions are, yes, they're better than they were last year, and it has nothing to do with Zlatan. They're a better team. They've brought in more depth in midfield. They've got better options along the back line. Chicharito fits in cleaner to what they did. But even with this team last year, Zlatan instead of Chicharito, they'd be better than they were last year. Like, they've added to what they've done, and Zlatan was a pretty good band-aid for Teclosa and Guillermo Barcelota to come in and, like, figure out where the club's at and what they want to do. But I'd argue they have one of the best rotations in central midfield. I think they have players that complement each other well in the final third. They've upgraded at left back. I think they have enough talent at right back. I'd love it to be Araujo, whatever it is, to fill that spot. And I believe they will bring in a good center back to help carry that back line. If they don't, if they go throughout the season and Daniel Starez and me start at center back, yes, there's problems for the LA Galaxy, but I don't think that will be the case.
You're trying to call Giancarlo Gonzalez you?
Sorry, that's what I meant to say Giancarlo Gonzalez and me.
Yeah,
I'm Daniel Starez in this scenario.
How much confidence do you have in Scalotto? Because Giancarlo Gonzalez had maybe the worst game I've ever seen an MLS defender have in that playoff loss to LAFC, and it was Scalotto who put him out there in that position because he didn't have more imagination than saying, I'm just going to play a center back at right back, and that'll make us better defensively.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was poor, but I have to see for more than a year, and a year in which they're not hijacked by what's going on up front, to see what this team is.
Efra Alvarez is in a boot right now. He says he heard something pop. Look at this front line depth. You have Pavone, Chicharito, and Katai. That might be among, if not the top three. But then after that, what do you have? They're going to sign Gordon Wild.
You can push Sebastian Legette out to any of those spots and then fill in.
Sure, but then what? Then what?
Sorry, can you find me the MLS team that has an elite backup attacking player?
I'm not even talking about elite. I'm just talking about a body. Anyway, give us the points over under.
54.5.
54.5. So to get to third place, I think you're going to have to be over 54.5.
He did say over. Going to you, Suze.
Over. I have him in second. I have him in second.
Okay.
I'm over as well. I also have them in second.
Well, not least I'm part of the herd. So if I fail, everybody else fails with me. Yeah, I just think they're going to get the center back done. And when they get the center back done, they're
talking.
Sort of... I'm convincing myself. Once they get that done, their mortal, you know, like the gaping wound that could get infected and kill them is going to be healed.
It's grim.
What is? It is.
I'm just wondering how many shrines Weeby has in his house.
Just one.
Talks about so many shrines.
It's just one. I'm still waiting for my, like, I asked the galaxy for some candles, some saint candles with Chicharito on them. They still haven't come.
Shocking.
It's heartbreaking.
Shocking.
It's heartbreaking. All right, let's keep it going. Minnesota United, MLS.com's favorite club. 53 points, a huge jump in 2019. Fourth in the Western Conference. They had a little front office transition. Mark Watson went from, he's staffed.
Producer Anders, go close again.
Sorry, I got to speak this way. Yeah, okay.
Go.
The Gaffa is entering his third year here. He's 26 wins, 31 losses, and 11 draws, but the first couple years were tough. Jan Gregus and Tomas Chacon, who just scored in preseason, are the DPs. They got Luis Amaria on loan from Vélez Sarsfield, the number 9, who just led the Ecuadorian League. He's a TAM signing this offseason. Got Tyler Miller to fill in for Vito Manone, who took off. And then some depth pieces. Marlon Harrison, Aaron Schoenfeld, Raheem Edwards, and Ja'Cory Hayes. Angelo Rodriguez is out. Darwin Quintero is out. Doyle, was last year an indication of where this team is going? Or was it an outlier?
I think it's an indication of where the team was going. Because if you look at what really killed Minnesota United in the first two seasons, they were terrible at preventing entries into Zone 14, the area of the field, you know, right in front of their own center backs. And then their own center backs weren't particularly good. They addressed that last year by bringing in Ozzie Alonso, who was on his last legs but was still very good for 2,000 minutes last season. They added Jan Gregus, who is very good. Maybe not a DP-caliber central midfielder, but he's close to that. And they added in Aiko Parra, the defender of the year, who maybe replaced Diego Chara last year as like the single most important to his team player in this league. Those guys are all back. As I said, Ozzie's probably on his last legs, but he still has something. They hit the jackpot with Hassani Dotson, who will take some of those minutes this year and be pretty good at defensive midfield. And like, as long as Ike stays healthy, they're defensively going to get it done. In attack, Luis Amaria looks like an upgrade over Angelo Rodriguez. Mason Toy took a big step forward last year. So far, he's taking a big step forward in the preseason. The question is, do they get the Bello Reynoso from Boca Juniors? I mean, he's a Boca Juniors playmaker. You kind of know what that means. Like, even the guys who don't make it as Boca Juniors playmakers are like Lucho Acosta level players. So, like, this team, I mean, they seem like they're in good shape. It's tough to pick against them. And for what it's worth, the underlying numbers like that too.
And I would say this is not as sexy a thing, and we'll go back to Reynoso, but Raheem Edwards, Marlon Harrison, Ja'Cory Hayes, Aaron Schoenfeld, like they brought in depth pieces to fill in, and you have Hassani Dotson who can play a few spots. So I think in terms of question marks around Ozzie Alonso's legs and how much you're going to get in certain spots, like you have a little bit more depth than I think a lot of
the bottom
MLS
of the
teams.
Roster is significantly better now, which it darn well should be than it was when they started or even the year after.
And so if you're upgrading from Rodriguez, and if you're trading what you got in gold from Vito Manone for Tyler Miller, and you're adding Reynoso to this team, you're a better team than you were last year from talent on the field. Now, how does Adrian Heath, who we haven't really seen do anything continuously in MLS, move from year one to year two? And we know the more influence and power he has over the team and on the additions. That's a question mark to me. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes forward, hence why we have that jersey and why he hates us, or you, you specifically.
No, he loves us. I talked to him in L.A. He's a huge fan.
But if they bring in Reynoso, I mean, we're talking about a team that can contend at the top of the Western Conference, a team that's going to be an MLS Cup conversation the entire year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seed the doubt a little bit, Suze. Seed the doubt. What could be the issue? What could Is it just Ike? Is it if something happens to Ike, the entire foundation, you know, that's the crack in the foundation that you can't fix, that you just kind of have to, you know, accept the leaks? Is Ethan Finley and Robin Lode, are they good enough on the wings? Will they be
Thomas
productive
Chacon?
Enough? Is Hot Boy Molino, if they don't get Reynoso enough?
Chacon's got the
this is the thing. I have this like weird feeling about Minnesota, and it's not a good one, but then I'm looking at everything that they've done and I'm like, that was positive. This is an improvement. Yep. This is good. And like, I just have this weird, like, I hate it. I have this like gut feeling that it's like, I don't know.
We were there for that first home game last year. It was a beautiful thing. You wanted the Loons to be good.
It was amazing. But then I was also there at their last game of the season when they hosted the Galaxy and couldn't finish anything. Yeah. I mean, it was just
12,
like
12 goals in their final 12
it
games
was
last
just
year.
I mean, like, ugh, sorry.
Okay, where's the over under?
Oh,
we gotta give Sousa a second
emotion.
Yeah, we gotta give her a second.
I don't like this. I love Minnesota.
Sousa's gonna sleep for the next 24 hours after this show
nice
to recover
to
I do
They're
I
so
love
nice
them
so bear in mind, this team 53 points last year. Over under is 55.5.
Under, smash the under, just bang on the under for me.
Why?
I just felt like last year it was the house built on Ike and Ozzie's back. And Ike and Ozzie, as much as I love both of them, are a year older and are basically everything has to go right again, in my opinion.
Okay.
Like, they didn't go out and change this team so fundamentally, unless they go get Reynoso. That would be fundamental. They didn't change it so fundamentally that I see this just taking, like, what's the step forward? What are they better at? Like, the individuals are just better.
Scoring. I think
part of
Angel Rodriguez had 5 goals, 2 assists in 21 starts and 28 appearances.
Yeah, that's bad. That's
having
poor.
A center forward is where you're
okay. All right, I'm taking the
David?
Other. I'm going over.
Whoa. I like that.
Suze?
I'm going under. Okay. I have them in 6, though. I have them in 6. They're going to make
the playoffs. I have them in the playoffs, and I'm feeling a little waffly about it now, but 7th, and I stick with it.
That one took a lot out of me.
7th, and I stick with it. Okay. Real Salt Lake in 3rd place in the West, which it may surprise you to hear me say that. It's surprising a lot of the time to look at the standings from 2019 and see that, given everything that they went through. 53 points. Craig Weibel, the GM, out amidst the falling out after the Mike Pecky stuff. Elliot Fall, who was the deputy to both Garth Lagerwey and then Weibel, has moved up into that position as GM. Freddy Juarez gets his first full year in charge after he took over in August of last season. He got the team to the playoffs in the middle of a really weird time, let's just say.
And won a playoff game.
Yeah. Albert Rusnak is a DP. Sam Johnson is a DP, and he's always on time. Jason Ramirez was signed as a young DP from Táchira in Venezuela, basically in the Jefferson Savarino mold, because Savarino was sold to Atletico Mineiro. Nick Raimondo retired. Joao Plata had his option declined. Sebastian Saucedo took off for Pumas in Mexico. Brooks Lennon was traded to Atlanta. So some pretty big changes. Justin Miram is in. Ashton Morgan is in. Zach McMath is in. There's really no TAM signings to speak of. Who are Real Salt Lake, Dave?
They are, in what they believe, the next for FC Dallas. Of they led the league in homegrown minutes last year, and now the man running the show in Freddy Juarez is a guy who ran the academy and knows these kids from the U11 level all the way up through Real Monarchs, who won the USL Championship. And when you look at this depth chart, there's no team in MLS that has more pieces that played heavy minutes in USL that are a major part of their depth chart this year going into the season than RSL. So that's who they are. They're a team that they believe in their talent development, and they're going to, I think, try and put together a group that plays cohesive and plays hard because they have a belief from the manager in them. And we've seen in this league, young players who have been pushed out, with a manager who, you know, gives them an opportunity and says, you can take risks, you can make mistakes, we're going to be okay, they can step forward with that. And I'd say they have some good talent at center back. I like their midfield 3. The big question mark this year for production is losing Savarino and the rest of your wingers.
It's the wing. It's Corey Baird and then TBD.
I mean, assuming they got Ramirez to start.
Yeah,
he's just 19, but he's
played
DP.
A lot of games. He's played a lot of games in Venezuela, and they had good luck with that with Jefferson Savarino.
Yep.
Jeff Jefferson, going to miss him. Yeah. Can they live up to what they showed at the back end of last year? Like, what is a reasonable expectation for Real Salt Lake?
Those are two different questions. I am worried.
Do the second one.
What is a reasonable?
Okay, actually, you said you're worried, and I want to know why.
I am worried about the first one, because while they've said a lot of the things about being FC Dallas and trusting their player. As soon as Freddy Juarez took over, Bofo Sacedo was out of the rotation. And I don't think Bofo Sacedo is the best player in the world or anything, but he never got that run of games that I kind of expected him to get, especially if you know you're going to head into the next season with questions on the wing. Well, and now he's starting for the first place team in Liga MX.
Do you think that maybe that was part of knowing that he was going to leave?
If you had played him, I don't think he would have left.
Maybe.
I don't know about that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
He didn't think MLS was hard enough, but he also didn't get free minutes.
Right, right. Well, anyway, that gives me questions. I have a lot of questions about what I've seen from RSL in preseason so far. He's got Justin Glad starting at right back, and he's starting Aaron Herrera on the wing. And then he's having Portillo drop back and split the center backs to push the fullbacks up in order to create width. What's the point of doing that if your fullbacks are Justin Glad, who's a center back, and Donny Toya, who is in no way, shape, or form an attacking left back? And, like, this is not the start of preseason. This is 10 days before the season actually kicks off. So that's all, like, I'm worried about a lot of that. I have not seen anything from this team in attack in the preseason. I thought last year down the stretch, while they were good at opening the game up, I didn't see any sort of attacking patterns. It was just like, hope Jefferson Savarino can do something. And I'll say, like, they beat the Timbers in the playoffs, and fair enough, that well done. But this team had only one win against a Western Conference playoff team last year. Their whole presence here was just not blowing it against the bad teams. And there are fewer bad teams in MLS in 2020 than there were in 2019. I just don't think RSL have added enough.
What's the player? What's the storyline? What's the thing that interests you here? Well, there's the buzzer. How about
Thank
you?
God. Thank God.
How about you just start off the points?
45 and a half.
Going under. Under. Where do I have them? I have them in 11th.
Uh-oh. I have them at 8th. So 45 and a half is really sort of pegging where they would probably be. So I'm going to say they'll end up at like 46, 47, and they won't make it because the line will be around 48, 49. So I'm going to say over.
Yep.
Barely over.
I'm going to go under.
Can I just say one thing, though?
Yes.
This is a team last year. We talked about it before. Every single time I looked at the standings, I was like, they're in fourth? They always surprised me. So what I'm saying now could, you know, again, this is MLS, and I could be totally, totally wrong.
Can I throw in my prediction, though?
Yeah.
Early contestants to win League's Cup. In 2020.
Well.
Dark horse. Or horse.
You get that cat on the field. And
the horse.
By the way, League's Cup details came
out.
The first games of League's Cup were like mid to late July. So
Ben, is RSL in League's Cup? Did I get that right? Okay. Thanks, Ben.
Cool. Ben, I guess, is still listening along here. Let's keep it rolling then. Second place. Seattle Sounders, 56 points. MLS Cup champions defending their second in three seasons. Brian Schmetzer's got 2.5 years at the helm. This is his fourth full season. Of course, Greg Largaway is building this thing. Nico Ladero, Raul Ruidíaz, and João Paulo are the DPs. João Paulo is the new signing the offseason from Botafogo, the central midfielder. Yaimar Gomez is the new center back because they lost a bunch of center backs, including Roman Torres and Kim Kihi, and of course Chad Marshall retired as well last year. They signed Miguel Ibarra, just happened here, and just to troll producing Anders, Shane O'Neill a big in as well. They lost Brad Smith, though, and they lost Victor Rodriguez, who was huge in the final. They lost arguably 3 of 4 starting defenders.
Not even arguable. Like the four starting defenders.
Xavier Arriaga could be the other one, so you could say maybe it's just two.
But from MLS Cup.
That's the arguable.
Okay, from MLS Cup, they lost three of four.
Okay, fine. MLS Cup's a fact. Don't give that stare across the table. What's the next step for a club that's won 2 MLS Cups in 2 years?
The next step would be to be a dominant team in the regular season.
3 years, sorry. 2 MLS Cups in 3 years.
To do what LAFC did last year would be the next step. It's not something that I think is going to happen this year for Seattle.
2 MLS Cups in 4 seasons, and they've been to 3 of the last 4.
Oh, anyway, my God. I'm just...
Math is hard.
So I'll say that, and I still think they're a heavy contender to win MLS Cup again this year. Yeah. Similar to what they've been every year. It's going to be rocky at times at the start. One, because they have CCL. 2, because they're literally recreating a back line.
The next step is the CCL. The next step is the CONCACAF Champions League. They've been down in Mexico for a week and a half preparing, just like Toronto did in 2018. They went out and they got a DP in the winter, which Garth Lagerwey never does, in order to solidify that deep central midfield, but also to save Nico Ladero wear and tear.
Who's injured now?
Who's nursing an injury and might not play in the first leg against Olympia, which should be fine.
Don't.
To be honest with you.
Probably don't do it anyway.
And Garth Lagerwey has come out and said, we're going to play the kids in the first part of the season. This is a chance to be the first team up the mountain. This is it. There's only one team that will ever be the first MLS team to win the CONCACAF Champions League. And by the way, this team was like 15-1-2 when Ladero, Ruy Diaz, and Jordan Morris played last year. I don't even think they're thinking about MLS Cup at this point. They have a chance to invent winning the Champions League for MLS teams.
That was a very Seattle statement.
They've invented so much, and this is just yet another piece to invent.
So you mentioned, though, the moves. They lost Brad Smith at left back, but they have Nuhu Tolo, obviously, and Jovan Jones can play there. And what they've done in bringing in João Paulo is they have flexibility. Svensson can play at center back. Svensson can play in central midfield. Roldan can play on the wing. He can play at right back if they need him to. So they've lost individuals from last year, but I think overall, if the center backs gel, they're a better team than they were last year. Whoa. Silence across the board.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about what that means. Is it in terms of CCL? Is it in terms of consistency throughout the regular season? Because sometimes that seems like an issue for the Sounders where they're like, yeah, we know. Brian Schmetzer knows. Last couple months, we'll get it going and we'll go be in a position to win because our talent level is better. But I think the biggest question mark is Arriaga and Gomez. Is that the right mix? Did they get the scouting right on both those guys? Did they sign the right players? Because for so long, this team was built around irrefutable logic, which is you have Chad Marshall and you have Ozzie Alonso and you have Stefan Fry behind that. So there's your logic. We don't even need to, but the rest of it will fall into place by the end of the year. If we have some good attacking pieces, it'll all work because now we have Ladero and Ruy Diaz as well.
But they won MLS Cup last year without two of those three guys. You can't question that. They replaced Chad Marshall mid-season, sort of, and they won without Ozzie Alonso. They've already turned the page from
that. But they don't have Kim Keehee now, who was the rock.
But that was their. But they went out and scouted him and signed him and put him in the team, and he was good enough.
Look, I trust Garth Lagerwey. I think they'll probably work. I'm just saying that is one of the few questions about a team that has very few, because Leerdam's a rock, left back. They built that out so that if they lost Brad Smith, it's no big deal. Jones and Nuhu can hold that thing down. Jordan Morris, if healthy, I think is like probably a top 10, 15 attacker in this league, which I think is a compliment to Jordan Morris. And Raul Ruidíaz is an assassin. They have depth at every position. I don't think Harry Ship's a game breaker. I don't think Miguel Ibarra is either. But if you have to play him, they're going to be a lot more comfortable doing that than a lot of teams that we've already talked about in the Western Conference going down their depth chart. All right.
Suze, 57.5 points.
Ooh. I'll take the over. Take the over.
That's a point and a half more than they had last year.
Yeah, I'll take the over.
I have them in second place just because I don't think that they will care so much about the way MLS goes for the first month and a half or so as they focus on that CCL side of things. I mean, Lagerwey said that. So I am going to say 57.5, you said?
Yeah.
I'm going to say over. I'm going to say over because I just think they're so good and they are so deep that throughout the back half of the year, even if they don't take it too seriously to start, or too seriously is not the right way to say that, even if they play the younger players early, they'll make up that difference.
So you have them second in the West.
I have them second in the West. And I don't feel as confident as I should be about the team I have in first.
Oh, interesting. 47.5 is the line that I have them at because I have them in fourth.
57.
47, sorry. Which is right where I have them. So I'm going to say slightly under.
I feel like I've done a really good job.
I feel like you have too.
Yeah.
Like,
I'd say there was one or two.
It was Sporting Kansas City. Everybody went over. Everything else was split just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm pretty annoyed with the numbers.
The Galaxy were all over.
What was your number for Galaxy?
See, 54.5.
I think Anders. I think he fell asleep on the buzzer. Right, he was angry or something.
I just want this to be known between me and Suze is we have the same exact picks, except I have Minnesota respect and she has Timbers respect.
Oh, there you go.
So for all of you out there, when your team does well, you can throw love on me or her and the other way around. But we prefer only the positive.
Reaction. All right, we'll end it here. LAFC. They made history last year. 72 points. That was a record, one better than the previous best. First in the Western Conference. First in the Supporter Shield standings. This is now the third year of Bob Bradley's project there in L.A. Their DP spots are filled. Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, Brian Rodriguez. On TAM, they went out and got Jose Cienfuentes and Francisco Ginela in this offseason to reinforce that midfield with some CONMEBOL youth internationals. Other big ins. BWP is there. Provide some depth and maybe some goal-scoring news up top. And then Kenneth Vermeer is their new goalkeeper after they let Tyler Miller go. Walker Zimmerman is out. They got a bunch of allocation for him.
Don't make a Kenneth Vermeer sweeping statement after one game.
Tyler Miller's out.
Strong Rice Mboli energy from Kenneth Vermeer in that first game.
Don't do it.
Steven Betashur also out. He was out of contract.
Felt a little bit like Buna time.
Maybe could have used him at right back in this CCL match. Can LAFC and Carlos Vela, Susanna, live up to the heights that they set in 2019? The standard last year. If you listen to this podcast, Bobby went on and on and on about it. It was really high. Can they get back there? Can they exceed it?
They're not going to exceed it. They're still the best team, I think, in the league. But I think that what they did last year was just so ridiculous. I think it's a incredibly tall task to hit 72 points again, Supporters Shield, all that. They're going to be good. They're going to be a great team. They're not going to. They lost what, two games all season last year, regulars?
Oh my God!
Four. Okay, I was way off. But pathetic. I think the quality around them in the West has gone up, and so I think that there are going to be more teams that kind of have them figured out a little bit. So I still think they're going to be really, really good. Carlos Vela is Carlos Vela. There's no denying that.
It's Carlos Vela, 34 goals and 15 assists.
No. But like I said, they're still going to be good. Yeah. They're just not going to be as great.
They got CCL to deal with, too.
And I don't think he has to be.
Not for long.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think he has to be. I agree with you. The three DPs don't fit on the field together. But Brian Rodriguez brings more to the game than Diego Rossi does, and he will take away some of the pressure load off of Carlos Vela's shoulders, especially as this year goes along and he gets more and more comfortable. I agree with everything Susanna said. It's hard to maintain that level. It hasn't really been done in MLS is the other thing. Normally teams peak and then you fall off the next year and you kind of find your feet again. If there's any coach in the...
It didn't used to be that way. DC United won the Supporter Shield.
I'm talking the last 10 years.
Okay. Well, the Galaxy won the Supporter Shield in 10 and 11.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Yes.
That's exactly 10 years ago. That's like at the...
2011 is 10 years ago?
Oh, God.
You said 10
Numbers
and 11.
Numbers are
you
hard.
Said 10 and 11.
So, yeah, if there's any manager in the league that can do it, it's Bob Bradley. Also, this team is different because they're young. They're still growing into themselves rather than other teams where you win Supporters Shield because everyone's in their peak at the same time, and you get it all to fit together. I like the moves they've made. Ginela in the first CCL game, he wasn't at Tuesta where he was coming and finding the ball everywhere and being a presence, but every time he touched the ball in a really hostile environment, he made the right play. His touch was clean. So you can already tell that they're preparing to lose guys, potentially sales overseas, and they're filling in with more talent.
This is the thing for me. They're trying to thread a needle that I don't think anybody else has ever just ruined that already. Anyway, they're trying to be the best team of the league while they also move players for big money. I mean, Atlanta United did it a little bit. They've done it once with Miguel Almirón, and they moved him, and last year they were very good, but they weren't at the same level that they were before. That's undeniable. This team is going to try to do the same thing. The other question mark I have with them is so many guys played at the very top of what they've ever done before. Like, this is the best I've ever played, the best I've ever been. From Mark Anthony Kay to Latif Blessing. I think you can argue Atuesta's in that boat as well. Probably Diego Rossi. In some ways, Carlos Vela from a consistency standpoint. They didn't really get that from the number nine position. But Tristan Blackman probably is that player. And now they're going to ask for that again. Eddie Segura probably in that place. Mm-hmm. Now he doesn't have Walker Zimmerman next to him. So all these guys that were at the very top, you're saying... in mass, are they going to take another step forward, or is there somebody that's going to drop down? And to me, that's what the Janela and Cifuentes signings were about. Not just filling in the back, but also knowing that there are going to come times when Mark Anthony Kay or Lateef or whoever it is not at the same level they were last year.
Four of the last five Supporter Shield winners, so basically all but one of the Supporter Shield winners during the TAM era, have lost 10 or more points from their previous season. That includes, I mean, Toronto went from 69 points to 36 points. We saw the Red Bulls drop 23 points off their total last year. So bear that in mind. The over-under, LAFC had 72 points last year. Over-under is 63.5.
Over, just barely. I have them first in the West. I think like 64, 65 probably. That'll win the West.
Suze?
Yep.
That'll finish you atop the West.
I have them in first in the West as well. I'll take the over.
I also have them in first. I'll also take the over.
Wow. Okay. Got that one wrong, I guess. I should have made it like 65.5 or something.
Yeah.
I do like that you came at me on the Supporter Shield backup next year's, and then you dropped the stats to prove that.
Well,
thanks, Doyle.
Okay, that's it for us. That's the Western Conference. Woo! Anything anyone wants to add? I mean, I think we've just mind dumped here.
Does the Supporter Shield winner come out of the West?
That's a good one.
No, because I think the bottom of the East is a little softer.
So you think there's just, I mean, the bottom of the East is softer.
Oh, sorry. I don't know who's good in the East. No, sorry. LAFC wins Supporter Shield. I don't know why I said that.
Okay, so you think back-to-back Supporter Shields for LAFC.
Yeah, I do.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think LAFC wins the Shield as well. I don't think it's the way it was last year. I think there's a race this time around. I mean, last year they just like, by the time August hit, it was pretty clear what the deal was. It won't be like that this
time.
So
you think Seattle pushes them, or you think someone?
I think somebody
in
the East pushes them.
And that
because
team
Seattle's
would be
first couple
preview
months.
For Monday.
And Monday will do our Eastern Conference preview. Kaylin Carr will be here with us to do that one, and then on Thursday our prediction show with Sam Stashkel. He now lives in my old apartment in Brooklyn, so he's coming in here. He'll sit at the table with us. I don't know.
Kaylin has to be on the Monday show because we can't trust what he does Wednesday night to come in at peak form on a Thursday. Xana has to carry
nice.
That bird.
Anyway, send us your categories, your guarantees, your random predictions, whatever it is for next Thursday. Again, we have categories planned out, the traditional ones, whether it be Rookie of the Year, 2022, Golden Boot, blah, blah, blah. But David Akam, Dark Horse MVP candidate, Yamil Assad outside back to watch, Dombaji, first time double-digit score. Anything like that, anything fun, anything you think will make any of us laugh or think or have a conversation that you want to hear, send it our way, 401-206-0MLS text. ExtraTime@MLSsoccer.com. That's my cue. We're out of here, everybody. We will see you on Monday. Do.